My name is Paul Tolley, and I'm absolutely delighted to have Elijah Boyle in OAM, in fact, in the studio today. Welcome to Armidale and to our community radio station, to ARM, Elijah.
Thank you for having me, Paul, and the great people of Armidale.
You are in Armidale, as you have delivered this year's annual Sanctuary Human Rights Lecture here. And can I just say to people, to listeners, that some of what we speak about may be difficult for some listeners to hear, but your lived experience. You were born in South Sudan. You'd lost both your parents before you were 9 years old. You spent 7 years in a refugee camp. Can you give us a brief background on events in South Sudan at the time for those who perhaps don't know the background?
Thank you, Paul. As you mentioned, I was born in South Sudan. I was part of that generation that was born into wars. That was in the early 80s. And through that journey, I've seen the impact of war, the displacement, the loss of life. Of course, I lost mom when I was 6 years old and dad when I was 9 years old, and that was due to war. And that has led me to be displaced and also find refuge and become a refugee in Uganda until, Australia say we have a place for you. And here I am in Australia for the last 22 years.
So you arrived, if I'm correct, in Australia in 2004 from South Sudan, or from Uganda, you're saying, not from South Sudan.
I came to Australia in 2002.
2002, okay. And I saw that you were a refugee and you were described as an unaccompanied minor. And it struck me that that's an incredibly powerful description of a child when you consider the implication of its meaning in your context.
Yes, so I came here as an unaccompanied minor. That means, someone with no parent or lost their parent during the war. And that's how I find myself coming here to Australia. But the beauty of that was that Australia has given me hope and really gave me that opportunity to explore my aspiration. And here today, I'm here delivering a human rights lecture at Armidale, which is a great thing. And I think for me, hope is not just about giving people opportunity, but it's allowing people to reveal their life. And here I am, grateful Australian.
But it's interesting, isn't it? You were able to find hope, and we might touch on this later, but not everybody out of those circumstances is able to find hope. I think the individual brings something to that as well as the opportunities provided.
Yes, and many people around the world are not lucky like me. We see today the crisis, we see a lot of people being displaced, but when they are given opportunity and people who got compassion to really give them that opportunity, they actually flourish because they are not just numbers, they are people with hope and aspiration.
What was it like at that age to arrive in a strange new country, people, language, food? So much must have seemed so different.
It was so different. I remember the first time we arrived, we were seven unaccompanied minor boys together. And we landed down in Brisbane. It was midnight and it was beautiful. We thought, oh, the light and all that, we were in a different heaven. But of course, when you come to a different country, there are always challenges. The language, the food, and the people that you meet and the environment. Like, for example, when we came, we have to learn how to do shopping in our supermarket. We have to learn how to eat certain food that we never had before. And I remember being invited to one of the friends invite us to his family for a lunch. And the lunch was boiled prawns. And all the seven boys who all sort of run away and say, oh, insects. and that was a cultural shock in terms of food. But we were able to get transitioned and get used to in the environment and get that support. But also finding that connection in your local neighborhood is always a challenge. But when you get the right people who are willing to take you along, you definitely will do well.
So I guess you went to school. Did you start off feeling like an outsider at school?
Yeah, so when I started in year 10, because I came here 16 years old, so I started year 10. And it was quite different. The school environment, the language, the challenge. I ended up being in ESL then, is now ELD, English as Second Language, and was able to learn how to read and write and construct great English. But also, I was able to be supported by great people, great teachers. And we should thank, we don't thank teachers enough, because they go above and beyond. And I was able to get that opportunity to learn English. I'm still learning English, but it was the opportunity that the school provided. But it's always difficult, and you find yourself lagging behind the homework, the assessment, because you don't know the language and you struggle.
Or the structures or the systems.
And the structures of the system. You know, navigate your way through that is a difficult thing. But when you have the commitment, the passion to learn and openness to ask questions, there will always be people there to hold your hand.
I imagine that people, some people listening may not even think about the fact that just learning a bus timetable or how to do banking, all of those things that we take for granted are so new.
Yes, and but the time we arrive, of course, when you live in refugee camp in entire your life, you don't have access to the thing that we have here in Australia, you know, the bank system, where you go and put your card in the machine and some papers come out. We don't have that. And it's more about learning and also trust the system itself to say, look, that's something that I could use and I have confidence in it. So it's always a journey of learning and always being able to really understand and navigate your way through it.
Did you enjoy school and learning? Was education important to you at that stage? I know it was later, but did you discover a love of learning at that time, or did that come on later?
I've always had the passion of learning. Because when I lost both parents, you know, at a young age, the only hope I have, or the tool, is to really inform myself. And the only way to inform myself was to learn. And through education, I always have that passion to be able to learn. And when I was given opportunity, you know, I was given my permanent residency in refugees camp to say, now you can go to Australia. One of the hope that I carry with me in my empty bag was education. So when I came here, I try hard, work hard in high school to make sure I understand the system, educate myself, and just be committed. Because I always tell people, you don't need to be clever or smart, but you just need to be consistent
and open
and determined.
And open, perhaps.
And open to learn. Mm. And being open to learn is always, it opens you doors. And the doors that it has opened to me, it allowed me to have people around me who were able to help me and say, look, you are very committed. And I'll give you an example. There was a teacher, I remember her name, in my old school, Kufuru Secondary College in Brisbane, Miss Rockledge. And she one day asked and said, oh, why am I getting low mark? And she said, look, the way you construct your English is not worth giving you high mark. But I think you can get help. And I said, so how do I get that help? And she said, look, I'm here, I will help you. And I say, so when do I come to you? And she say, when do you want to come? And I say, look, I'm available from 7 a.m. in the morning before the class bell ring. And she say, yep, I'll be here at the school at 7 a.m. and we will go through all the English until the class, you know, first bell at 8:45. So that is a commitment. But that means that when you're open to seek help, you will always get it. And through Ms. Rockledge was my really an eye-opener and motivator and gave me that hope that you can learn regardless of the challenges you go through education.
Because education really does change lives, doesn't it?
It's a powerful tool. It's changed life. and it opened doors for you to learn things and be able to really connect with the right people.
So you went on in education, and that was why I asked you that question. You have a Master of Law, Master of Justice and Intelligence, Bachelor of Human Services. You're currently undertaking a Juris Doctor at the ANU in Canberra. Why did you choose law as your area of study?
Over the years, as I mentioned, being born into a country that has gone through wars and injustices, and there were two things in my mind when I came, either become a medical doctor or, do some social advocacy work. And so law, I find law that is something that can allow me to understand the system, have an opportunity to stand and give me that knowledge to be able to stand on the thing I'm passionate about. And I think it opened me my eye to why certain things are done in certain way. And the world has become so legalized, and I think it's important we arm ourselves with information so we can really advocate on things we are passionate about. So my passion was really to understand the legal system and being able to help others, if I can, on the thing that I'm passionate about.
So do you think that having entered Australian society in the way you did, that perspective of having come from somewhere else, as you did, gave you more insight into the structures and the systems and the possibilities that you're talking about?
Yes, so our experience in life give us strengths to be able to be curious and really understand why certain things exist and how they happen the way they happen. And for me, my life experience of seeing injustices, seeing losing both parents, it was really that opportunity. And I call it opportunity because when you lose your parent and you've gone through trauma, you take those as a learning opportunity and give you that hope to move forward. And for me, it was about moving forward and understand the legal system in Australia so I can also be part of the society that can create influence and create impact. And for me, it's more about how can I contribute to the society I call home, and that is Australia. And through my legal knowledge, I'm able to contribute in any area that I feel I can add value to.
So you had a lot of successes and achievements in education, many others in social areas as well. 2019 Australia Day Local Hero in Queensland. You're a director of the Ethnic Communities Council in Queensland, member of the Queensland Government's Gambling Advisory Committee, Federal Government Settlement Advisory Council, and you had a leading role in removing children from adult prisons in Queensland. Why was that critically important?
I think for me, and I always get emotional about this, because when I was growing up as an orphan, one of the things that I've seen was I don't want other child to be in the same situation. And for me, why I was so passionate to do advocacy for the children in the criminal justice system in Queensland was to be able to really put that value into the society to say, look, I don't want to see another child being the same situation I've been in. And if I can be part of that influence, why not take it? And for me, the work that I did in Queensland in terms of the criminal justice for the under 18 children in adult prison, and I find that is their children. And I think we have the responsibility to treat them as children. So for me, as a poor kid coming from a refugee's background and to claim to be a voice for the young people in the criminal justice system was something that I feel like, as an Australian, I should do. It's my job. It's my responsibility to create that impact. And I was able to do that and share my experience with them and say, look, I've been, you know, I may not be in the criminal justice system, but justice has its own, injustice always is injustice. And for me, it was able to make sure I don't want to see that injustices. as part of this wonderful society.
And I think it's interesting now, isn't it, that in the past people took philosophical views one side or the other on issues like that, but research is showing that even at 18, the human mind is not fully formed. There are now good arguments about what age it's possible to even to take responsibility. So you can now back up that position with evidence-based statements, not just what some call bleeding heart statements.
Exactly. And the society really has double standard. And one of those double standard is when certain happen, especially when come to young people and children, we treat them as children. But when they commit crime, we don't treat them as children. Mm. And that's really the tragic in the society. Crime is crime, but at the end of the day, as you mentioned, children are children. And I think the best thing we could do is to support them to understand the reason why they're doing what they do. And I think that's really a critical part. You know, we don't allow children to drink at a certain age. We don't allow them to drive at a certain age. We don't allow them to vote, you know, at a certain age. But when they commit crime, we punish them as an adult. And that's really unfair in the society. I think the best thing is to help them to understand those issues.
And we can send people to war before we can allow them to vote.
Exactly.
It's a great point you're making about the double-edged nature of this. It's very strong, isn't it? This year you were appointed CEO of Act for Peace, and I didn't even know of this organisation until I read that you were coming to Armidale. But you obviously bring a great deal of lived experience to this role. Can you tell us about this organisation and perhaps what they do and what their aspirations are?
Yes, so I had the privilege of being appointed as CEO for Act for Peace this year. And Act for Peace has been there for 75 years.
I was astonished to find that out and that I didn't even know.
And historically, it was founded in 1948 by the National Council of Australian Churches. Mm-hmm. And the National Council of Australia was at the time supporting refugees who were displaced during the Second World War. Mainly from Europe, Eastern Europe. And that's how Act for Peace was formed. So it was then called Church World Service. And then it changed its name in 2018 to Act for Peace. And what we do is to support people who are displaced by conflict and disasters around the world. And Act for Peace's goal and ambition is to support people who are displaced to have a safe place to live. And we do that by partnering with local organizations, local community groups in 20 countries across the world to really allow them to have a safe space. We do that through providing health services, providing social enterprises to people, refugees who are displaced, to really empower them to rebuild their life. And that's really very critical work what we do. So yes, we do a lot of work at the moment in the crisis in Gaza. We are there. We are in many countries where there's always conflict to support the people that need our support. And our source of revenue is from general population. You know, people who donate, people who want to give other people hope and opportunity to support. So, yes, we've been there will be 75 years this year, and it's quite remarkable work.
And if people do want to support your work, I guess they can go online and Google Act for Peace.
And if you want to support, we have a lot of initiative at the moment. One of those initiatives is Gaza Field. So we're raising funds to support our projects in Gaza, in West Bank, and in Jerusalem. We also have what we call racial challenge, and we will be running a racial challenge afield during Refugees Week. And racial challenge is about creating awareness about the experience of refugees and in displaced camp. And it's more about having 3 days with your children and family, eating one food every day and learn from that. And through that process, people raise and donate money to you, and you put that towards Racial Challenge, which will allow us to support displaced children, school, health in displaced camp around the world.
Things that most Australians can take for granted, but many others can't, and you couldn't as a young person.
Yes, I lived through one racial for 10 years when I was in refugees camp and displaced camp. And I think that experience, when you walk in the shoes of someone, it gives you a deep understanding about what they have gone through. And that's what we do at Act for Peace. It's about giving people power to be able to empower themselves. And because those people, we see them as people with hope and aspiration, we just need to give them opportunity to create that hope, to create that safe place where they can feel, I have someone who is there shouldering my issues with me. And that's what we do every day.
Yeah, sharing, a sense of sharing and being seen is so important.
Yes.
Blaming migrants and refugees for social and other problems in Australia is not new. It goes right back to the Federation of the country. But currently migrants are being blamed for the housing crisis and other current political issues, not only those that are here, but those that would like to come. Why is it so important that migrants and refugees are not seen as other, but as people with similar feelings, desires, and aspirations to our own?
I totally agree.
It's a big question, isn't it?
As we see, yes, and I totally, as we see, either in through media or community. Look, Australia is a country born out of immigration. And of course, the only people we find were the First Nation, and we should be grateful for them allowing us and gracefully forgive us to come to their land and welcome and still having that journey of healing with us. But we are a nation that was built on many people coming from different parts of the world. And that's the strength that bond us together.
It was built on diversity, wasn't it?
It was built on that diversity, and that diversity is what makes us so unique, Australia, in the world. And blaming migrant, I don't see it as a solution. I think the more thing we could do is to create opportunities for those people to be able to really function in the society, but also provide responsible policies that can support. Because housing, it's an ongoing issue. It's not only just came yesterday because of migrant. It's a social issue that needs a responsive policy that can address those needs. But also we have to understand migrants contribute enormously to this society, to Australia. And I think it's one of our strengths that we need to embrace rather than make it a issue that can divide us. And I can give you a simple example. In the last few days, I've been in Armidale and I've seen the small community of migrants of Yazidis. You know, every restaurant I go to, a cafe or the school, they really integrated very well, and they're working, they're helping, they're contributing to the economic. That's the strength we should be embracing. That's the strength we should be talking about. How can we do more of this? How can we build a better Australia where, whether you came today or tomorrow or yesterday, you have a place that you can feel safe and contribute to the society? That's the conversation we should have, rather than having a conversation that divides us on the basis of who arrived when. That is not the debate we should. We should be focusing about welcoming and embrace that diversity that is very unique. And it's really a fabric of our society that we need to do. And I think welcoming different people from different countries, we should be just so compassionate to say, how can I help you? How can I take you to be where the society is? And allow them also to learn. It's about empowering them and building the capacity to understand the system as well.
And you're talking about a positive approach, and you're talking about hope, but it does appear in the current debate that some people only see what they think they themselves and the country might lose from migrants and refugees. But you're talking about what the country might gain, and that's a totally different mindset, 180 degrees.
And that's exactly, I think, where I come from. One of the biggest strengths that is naturally been given to us as human beings is the sense of being able to have compassion toward others. The humanity of today is really, we become a global village, and when we embrace our equal humanity, we can reach a solution. We can agree on certain things. And for me, it's not about blaming. It's more about how can we fix and solve the issue. And if we think migrants are the issue, what is that issue? And how can we work together to address that issue? And that's where it comes to. Let's sit down. Let's talk about it. Let's see how can we empower them to be able to be where we are. And I think there's always tough conversation, but there's always way forward for the society. And we are a very compassionate society that can actually allow that hope to flourish. And I think our debate should be led by compassion. Our debate should be led about what impact, what positive impact can we bring to allow these people to settle and contribute effectively.
The Dalai Lama said, and I'm quoting from memory, but I'm pretty close to his words. He said, we're all the same. We all want food, shelter, the opportunity to love our children, the opportunity to feel hope. And he was talking about the need of compassion in the way we see and interact with one another as you're speaking.
And I totally agree. And he summed it up very well. And really, if the society and even the human right we talk about, the human right issues we talk about, they can be addressed, all be fulfilled through hope and compassion. And that's really a strength we have as human beings. And the society today, the thing we see are addressed by common people. And even if you look at the way migrants are welcome in different areas, either in the cities or regional, it's more around the compassion and local people saying, what can I do to support my fellow human being? And for me, bringing hope to other people and compassionately work together as a community, it allowed us. I know there are times we have not been kind enough, particularly when it comes to our First Nation. We recently had a referendum, and I thought it was a time that we can show our compassion and say thank you to our First Nation, but we have not fulfilled our compassion's will. But I think the society has opportunity to reflect on itself and say, how can we make compassion and hope be a tool that we can use to fulfill human need?
And I think what's important in that situation is often to do less talking and more listening,
yes,
if you can put it like that.
I totally agree. Action speaks louder. And I think there's a lot of debate we can do, but when we debate and talk more without action, we can't see the result. So in order for us to realize the result, we've got to take action. But that action needs to be driven. It needs to be driven by the purpose of what impact can we create as a society collectively to address the challenges that we face as a community and society.
We've been speaking a lot about Australia and your experience in Australia, but can you just say a few words on a more global level? Conflict and displacement are still with us. They don't appear to be diminishing. How do you see Australia's role and response, perhaps politically and also in terms of policy, in a more international space?
Australia is a country that respects democracy and human rights, and it's important that we play a critical role as leaders, not only in the Asian Pacific, but also in the global stage. And the current issues we have, whether it's war in Gaza, and I made my position clear on behalf of ACPO Peace that we need a permanent ceasefire, because it's important as a society and a global world that we really need to spend more on peace rather than spend more on war. And I think that's really the stand that I want Australia to have, those take a leadership role in how we respond to international crisis, in how we respond to policies that allow the society to be a peaceful society in order to do that. So when I think, for example, the war in Gaza, of course, Hamas started the war and the response, But again, the way where it has gone so far, there's about 35,000 people died in Gaza. And I think it is time for Australia to take a stand and say, look, let's bring in ceasefire. Let's call for all the hostages to be released, but also let us stop the killing of innocent civilians. And this is really the leadership we need. We need to be leaders in peace. We need to be leaders in bringing harmony. We need to be leaders who can bring hope to those thousands of people being displaced, because we have the power, we have the capacity, and we have the experience as a nation that is peaceful to stand on that global stage and say, how can we create a peaceful world where everyone feels safe to live?
I'd like to finish by asking you a personal question. Given your background and your experiences, particularly as a young person, and we know to what an extent the experiences in childhood stay with us and shape our lives, how are you able to, in your work and in your private life and with your family, remain and hold on to that positivity and the hope? Do you have dark moments?
I believe, and through my experience, I've learned that the world will always throw anything at us. The world will always have a temptation against us. But if we remained to that hope to say there's a better tomorrow, tomorrow will not be the same. And that's the principle I've lived over the years, you know, from the early age. It's particularly when I lost my dad, I came to realize that the world is not going to be easy. And at that time, I find myself between two worlds. One was facing the world of hopelessness, and the other one was the world of being hopeful. And I choose to be hopeful, to say, look, there's a better tomorrow. And that allowed me to move forward. And that allowed me to really look at things in a positive way, to say, the better experience I had today will allow me to be a better person tomorrow. And for me, I take my experience as the step of the past that I can learn from, but they will never determine my next destination in life. So those steps remain my experience, my strengths, and they allow me to determine the next future. And that's really the hope I want to see, because always there's a better tomorrow. We just need to thrive with hope.
I've been speaking with Elijah Ball, OAM, who's been in Armidale delivering the human rights lecture for Sanctuary. Elijah, thank you very much for coming into the studio and sharing thoughts and experience and life with us.
Thank you very much for having me, and to the great people of Armidale. You are great humanitarian. You are very hospitable people, and I really enjoy being in this community in the last few days, and I really appreciate your hospitality, and keep the spirit. Let's make Australia continue to be a great country.
Thanks so much.